Welcome to another edition of What the Fuck Happenings Here. Not a podcast. Guess it should be, but whatever. Anyway. So there's somebody sent me emails. First I got one where a guy says he is a professor of some kind teaching something, and the subject of ephelism came up, and he wants to know what the ephelist perspective is on murder. I mean, they're kind of different subjects, actually, philosophically. I mean, ephelism is just the conclusion that the biological mechanism, the DNA molecule, is run amok. And that's all it can do is run amok, frankly, because it's just a pointless competition to create gladiators that, use each other to advance their own DNA. It's crap. Consumption, reproduction, addiction, and parasitism. You know, it's not a good thing. How you fix it, what do you do about that fact, is a whole different subject in a sense. It's a whole nother subject about how, and also whether you take too seriously some notion that the human condition is so much more important than the animal condition, that what's happening to a mammal in terms of its struggle to exist, in terms of the miseries and abuses it has to endure, is somehow so much more significant or something. So there's lots of philosophical or even scientific conclusions you have to draw before you can even get to balancing, and making some equation and saying, in this circumstance, it's okay to do something, and in this circumstance, it's not. So this whole argument about social contract, so human beings think they're doing this, democracy thing, and at least have put some value on the democracy being better to choose bus drivers, so to speak, or, what's the best answer? So you don't get a professional, to steer your bus. You just get the average Joe's opinion and have him, essentially with a substantially lower knowledge base make the decision. So again, I'm for democracy because it's really our only choice. But it would be better, if dumb people could tell who was smart and who wasn't. Apparently they can't. They just can tell, who's well shaven or has a nice suit. Looks the part. They don't really care about whether they can think the part. The simple answer to the question is that I think it's okay to murder Nazis, let's say. I don't know about the Japanese thing, just because it was such an illegitimate war in so many respects that, that maybe that isn't okay. They weren't on our land, so to speak. I guess the ones that did step on American soil or trespassed into American waters, okay, maybe you can kill them. It just gets very complicated. It's not even that it's complicated, it's nuanced. Let's say that. And of course everybody's triggered, by everything stated. So you could say something like, we shouldn't spend too much on broken toasters, fixing a broken toaster when you can replace them so easily in the world. Fact is that resources are scarce just because there's so many people having babies in so many places where they're completely unsustainable and they don't have resources, frankly. And so life is dirt cheap. So you don't spend $10 million to fix one toaster when you can buy a new toaster for 48 cents. It just doesn't make any sense. So in that sense, what, am I for murder? No, I'm just for not wasting resources on lives that aren't even reclaimable in a lot of cases, right? So you could say, is supporting the right to die murder? Some people think it is. But I certainly wouldn't. Okay. I don't know if I'd subsidize people to die, but it might even be an idea that could be defended. because it's just so efficient. You know, die properly on purpose, deliberately, you know, in a controlled environment, do it gracefully, exit, makes a lot of sense. And certainly, if a person is capable of even saying the words, "I don't think my life is going anywhere," then their life probably isn't going anywhere. It's probably the truth. We exaggerate in the positive side. We don't exaggerate on the negative side. You know, our ego tends to exaggerate in only one direction. So it's kind of silly to think somebody's exaggerating how bad their life is, or how pointless it is, or how boring it is, or how useless it is. No, the odds are it's the other way around. So you really don't have to worry. If they can actually think dying is a good idea, then it's probably a good idea. All right, so yes, I probably will bring up issues relevant to this subject of, you know, what even constitutes murder, you know, when it's justified, all of that crap. But, you know, there's so, you know, it's all layers of bullshit in a sense, because in the end, I'm going to argue that the effortless perspective is all there is sentient feeling experience. All there is organisms manifesting a perception of pain or a perception of relief, pleasure. And all you're saying is the pain thing is bad. Let's have as little as that possible. And yes, the feeling pleasure thing is good, but let's understand it might just be made out of removing a negative. So why have the negative in the first place and then remove it? I mean, why make the thing hungry and then put it into a virtual reality to go get food? Is that really free food? Is that really a free lunch? Is that free happiness? It's not really free, because you had to give him first the need. You had to first make him lonely and then make him happy because he found a hooker or whatever. So then you could even go a step further and just say, yes, it's, you know, there's just no point in creating the whip and then saying, I won't whip you. You know, just don't bother making the whip in the first place. So, under what circumstance you're saying, well, from what philosophical perspective is the real point? And if your philosophical perspective is that we are not doing anything, okay, that isn't prefaced, that doesn't have a cause before it, that's decidedly negative, that is, we're just fixing things nature breaks. The organism is born in pain, essentially, and it's just a matter of trying to get above the water, trying to get enough air to breathe and enough comfort find it tolerable, finding a comfortable temperature. You're just spending your whole life looking for your comfort zone. And you're going to spend a lot of time uncomfortable for the tiny amount of time you're going to actually be in the place that's sustainably nice. So from that philosophical perspective, you're not murdering somebody by ending their pointless drowning in the quicksand, especially in the context, again, understanding that everybody, the 7 billion people doing it, all think they're doing it in some special way. My story is such a great story. My story needs to finish. My story, all the stories are stupid. And if you know that ahead of time, well, yeah, it's going to make it kind of obvious. So again, what's murder? It's murder. Slowly killing somebody by slowly turning a screwdriver into their eyeball or something. I appear to be back. Sorry. Some sort of glitch. I don't know whose fault it is this time. Computer or the software, Linux or what. Anyway, computer just glitched. Just poof. Gone. decided to close down. I have all the, suspend and hibernate features disabled, so I don't know what that is. The sync doesn't look right either. It's a little slow. Anyway, we'll see what happens. See if it does whatever it does again, so I have to put the pieces of the video together, so that's the problem anyway. So there's going to be a little lack of continuity. So I was at, you know, there's different ways of killing something, murdering, right? So you can murder it hard, torture it to death, or you can, in an instant, without it even knowing it happened, cease its function. And I would argue that clearly one of those is preferable to the other. And in some cases, I just don't, you know, what's the point of calling it murder? It's a nice word, but does it really mean anything if it wasn't going anywhere? So this fetus picture is kind of, you know, so I'm going to be reading this article from 2018 and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, it's going to take forever just because I could just critique the whole pretentious bullshit of people's publications. Anyway, but this little fetus is probably a dead fetus. You know, it's probably not a person who became a person. So he was murdered, or she. you know, are you seeing that, or are you seeing something else? You know, that's the trick. So what you see depends on what you have as a philosophy. So that's part of the whole. So what you have is a knowledge base, understanding. So frankly, I personally have gotten quite used to seeing people as fish. And yeah, so, you know, you don't get caught up in a whole bunch of, you know, there's nothing magical about it all. You know, it's just a bunch of silly fish swimming around doing silly shit and day in and day out. And so the idea that you would murder the bucket of fish, yeah, you did him a favor, frankly. Anyway, it can be seen that way. So this is something called Quillinet or something. It's really kind of... Anyway, Poofdery, Quillinet, and so this is who we are, Colin Wright, and then it's written by a Keaton Engel. So yeah, it's just the whole, no continuity here. This obviously looks like this is supposed to be the author of the article, and it's really the guy who created the crappy website. But anyway, who cares? It's just, you know, ads everywhere, blah, 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 blah. All right, so the question, the statement made is antinatalist, the antinatalist paradox. There's no paradox. So the end result is he's going to make an argument about how, oh, the last days for the last humans will be so horrible that it'll make the whole thing just too awful to imagine. And it doesn't matter how much suffering you prevented because, oh, it's too hard those last couple of days. Which is just so silly in the context of all the world wars for the last, you know, 2,000 years, or even, you know, go back 10,000 years, the mass murdering going on, oh, just insane amounts of brutal death, you know, just the brutal life, you know, you get a common infection and, you know, they got to cut your legs off and, just horrible shit. He's going to make an argument that somehow you have to negate the whole philosophy because there's no way to do the last day. When of course there is. There's even been movies made like Last Man on Earth. Doesn't look all that bad. I mean, if I had a choice, Last Man on Earth or go have a root canal. Oh, yeah, I'll take that Last Man on Earth thing, sure. I'm just saying. All right, so what if you could choose one person in your life to end all end their suffering? So he doesn't even put this in any kind of rational context, like, okay, you could just end their suffering, but you don't change anything else. You just get rid of their disease. So if they have cancer, you make the cancer go away. That's what he's really saying. He's not really saying end their suffering by ending their life or doing something more dramatic to end it. Okay, all the pain and frustration and woe intrinsic to their mortal condition would disappear, and best of all, with no financial investment, effort, or trouble on your part. Yes, you just asked the aliens to do it. Fine. I mean, yes, this is a reasonable thought experiment. What if? But what if I could also just switch off the whole universe. You know, well, what's the big deal? You know, obviously it's not going to torture anything. Nothing goes into purgatory. Nothing goes to jail. Nothing goes hungry. Nothing goes anything bad. Everything looks just very Martian, you know. Well, whatever. With no financial investment effort or trouble on your part. Okay. All that is required from you is to abstain from an activity with no compelling justification. Well, that's kind of silly, right? I mean, the activity, okay, unfortunately is woven, you know, the activity of sexual reproduction. You can't really, unfortunately, separate for a lot of people sex from procreation. So he's saying the activity is procreation. Now, we know that most people don't procreate rationally. They procreate without thinking about it at all, okay? They don't talk about it, they just do it. That's how most of us got here, is just sloppy, okay? Sloppy consequence of a lack of care and caution. You know, the parents are reckless drivers, essentially. Just no doubt about it. They just couldn't care less about thinking about what they're doing, where they're going, how they're going to get there. Nah, forget it. You just push the go button. Okay, would any reasonable person neglect such an opportunity? Question mark. Surely it seems obvious that any other option would be patently unethical. So the funny part is you're stating it pretty obviously that yes, it would be unethical. And you're voting for the unethical. Something that's just obviously unethical. You're saying I will subject people to harm and torture because I have a philosophical idea that it's a good idea. Because I have a notion in my head that says, oh, yeah, it's okay with me. Well, maybe it's not okay with your victims. Did you ask your victim if it's okay? No. Did you give a shit? No. Did you pay any attention? No. You're just saying you think so. Well, why does that mean everybody else has to think so? Well, anyway. Although many layers of empirical evidence and argument are lauded on top, these questions from the logical core of moral philosopher David Benatar's incisive 2006 book, Better Never to Have Been, The Harm of Coming into Existence. So this is the part where he just plays devil's advocate and pretends, oh, yeah, it's all a very rational, very nice book, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes about the process of saying, oh, but I'm going to trash it with a trivial argument. It's just so stupid. Within its pages, Benatar offers a programmatic and detailed defense of antinatalism. Yeah, I don't know if it's the detailed. It's detailed certainly in the subjects it covers, but in the subjects it doesn't cover, there's not that much detail. So clearly there's no detail of evolutionary biology and, you know, the fact that we are just bugs and blah, blah, and all that kind of stuff. That detail isn't in there. The idea that procreating is morally wrong because humans' lives are, on balance, so awful that such lives are not worth starting. Well, we know that it's not really about every life. It's about what you get with the package. So the package doesn't get here for free. So you have to pay the delivery cost. Like, just to have stuff delivered to us, right? Just to get stuff from the store, to buy things. We know we have to kill people, right? I mean, the UPS drivers now and then, their truck goes amok and somebody has to die. All the people going to the grocery store, it happens every day. Somebody's killed, you know, for a banana. Just a fact. You have to pay a price for it. And so the argument isn't, oh, is every life suck and is every life a terrible, awful burden? Maybe not. I would say it is, but I mean, frankly, somebody, I guess, is crazy people can say it's worth it, okay? There's lots of people who don't mind having cancer more than once, you know, and they think they're winning. They fight cancer, and that's their life, fighting cancer. And they're kind of proud and having fun fighting cancer. Would I think there's any sense to that or it makes any sense at all? No. Would I think I would be winning? No. I would consider myself a preposterous loser if I got to have it more than once. Anyway, so most lives. All right, back again. It's like every 10 minutes. So weird. Not exactly, but I don't know, so whatever. I'll set up just to see if I have to make the video in 10-minute chunks or something. Computers. It's always some kind of stupid crap. Anyway. We've kind of gotten to... So each life isn't the same life, so it's kind of stupid to say that you're doing it for each individual life. You're doing it because to justify the good life, you're going to have the bad life included with it. So it has to be judged as a package. You don't get to have, you don't get to go to Las Vegas and just keep the times you win, and you don't count the ones you when you lose. So that's the catch of it. All right. all right, so human lives are on balance so awful that such lives are not worth starting. So the threat of a bad outcome is substantial. So that's why it's not worth doing. Okay, it's not just that every single outcome is bad. It's that the bad outcomes are bad enough to overwhelm any potential good that could be derived out of the good lives. Again, I would argue that Benatar is correct, that the good lives really aren't good enough either. But anyway, it's kind of unfair to the argument to say that the argument is just about saving every individual from their existence. It's really saving the people who are going to get the worst end of the stick from being victims. All right, for Benatar, a set of immutable asymmetries characterize all sentient life between pleasure and pain, or well-being and harm. So these are all combinations of words. You know, this well-being word is used by a lot of people, and whatever that would be. But I would argue that you're really just going from a state of comfort to discomfort, discomfort to comfort. I mean, it's just really the only game to play is the one created by the fact of the negative state has to exist first for there to be a positive state. There's no... just as we can't poof into the universe and be a good because there's no bad in the universe for us to correct. There has to be a flaw before we can fix it or polish it or do something. And fixing is all there is. There's just fixing what's broken. There's not any other activity that could possibly be productive, because it would assume there's a negative condition pre-existing. A universe with no sentient life isn't in need of sentient life. It doesn't have a bad condition. It isn't in pain. It isn't suffering. It isn't in any way imperfect. Okay, in which the latter are more frequent, permanent, and consequential than the former. Right, so again, he's just making a contrast between the amount of pain endured versus pleasure. But again, the argument could be is that the value of pleasure is used up by the value of you eradicating the negative condition that had to pre-exist it. And there is no capacity for it to undo some other harm. Okay, you being relieved of the pain of your broken leg does not fix somebody else's broken leg. Avoiding pain is always good, but being denied pleasure is never bad. So that's a simple enough argument. Preventing pain is always good. Instead of avoiding, you could say, is always a good thing. And you can't never call it bad, because you're never going to be put in some negative condition by the absence of some future circumstance where you're going to derive a pleasure. And what's how you're going to derive the pleasure? By first having the negative condition, first having the headache and then getting rid of the headache. If that part of the asymmetry is true, okay, that this whole system just really runs on bad, and that you have to have a bad before you can have a good, it's certainly two different arguments then, you know. So if you don't believe that, you know, then you're looking at the condition in a different circumstance, you know, you're viewing a different reality. And maybe you could concede that if it were true, if you found it to be true, that there was no intrinsic good, there was just whips that weren't being used, you know, that you would invent it then. Okay, just as the religious kooks, some of them will concede if they found out there was no God, they would understand life to be quite a hideous thing. Because without the rewards God's promising, it's a very bleak story. So there are some Christians who would admit that. Following this argument is logical conclusion. Following this argument to its logical conclusion, Benatar argues that bringing someone into existence is always a harm. So it doesn't really have to be always a harm. If you understand that it's not nice to be rude to people, that is, impose death on them for your convenience, impose harm on them for your convenience, all of those things. So it doesn't always have to be a harm. The point is, though, is if you're going to go to Las Vegas, you're going to lose money. Okay, some losses will be incurred, and you have to account for that. The person created, but failing to bring that person into existence will only deny them pleasures they'll never know. It'll only bring them what you could call a relief for affirmities they never had. And so, yes, they won't need to have the morphine, because you're not going to burn their skin. You know, you don't. They're not going to need the experience of first being deprived and hungry to know the satisfaction of eating. But they're not going to miss it in any way, and they're not going to be in any negative state because they haven't chosen to jump into the adventure of being alive. Therefore, the only guarantee, I'll keep the mouse moving, see if that makes a difference. We're at 7 minutes. Okay, got a couple minutes until disaster. Therefore, the only guaranteed way to avoid increasing harm quotient of sentient life is for human procreation to be discontinued as a moral imperative, as an understanding. That's all. You just understand it's not a good idea. And let's understand that to sustain human population, people have to have a lot of kids. And it's just the truth, you know, that everybody has to have their share, so to speak. And so if half the population choose to be single because they enjoy the single life, then obviously the other half have to have twice as many kids to sustain human existence. So the whole argument is hinged on some notion that people are in a condition now where they enjoy having kids, when the argument is most people who have lives, that is, an education and some kind of sophisticated and fancy civilization to live in, choose not to have the necessary number of children to perpetuate the human race. The human race would, in fact, go extinct if the most educated half of the human population on Earth right now was to decide. If their behavior was to decide, so we just take the 50% of the smartest people on Earth, and if their behavior are three-quarters, the top three-quarters, okay, and we let them decide, their decision is to exterminate the human race, in a sense. Their behavioral consequence will be the extinction of the human race. So people are already behaving as if this wasn't an imperative. And I think most people, those single people, would be rather agnostic, because all they really want to do is preserve their life and their story. And they really aren't that terribly interested in everybody else's story. And it's just a fact. I mean, even if I wasn't an effluist for all kinds of these moral and ethical reasons, I'd still be pretty apathetic about the whole human project without me in it. I mean, if I'm not in it, then, you know, it's going to suck. The story isn't nearly as interesting somehow if it's just the story of human beings, because you all look kind of smelly and creepy to me. There's not much of what you're doing that I find all that fascinating. I'm going to be rather agnostic to giving a poo, okay, whether you make more of yous. Because if you're not going to make more of me's, and that's very unlikely, right? there's only one of me, then shit, fuck it, who cares? All right. So I'm just saying there's going to be a lot of people agnostic just because there's no notion that you get to tell the same story. You know, it's always going to be some kind of different story. And I would clearly argue that I really wouldn't have an interest in forcing myself to relearn all the lessons and go through the whole process again of making all the stupid mistakes and, you know, the humiliations and the other things. Oh, I don't want to do all that crap again. Fuck that. I really don't have an interest in, you know, going back to the beginning and trying to get the right answers again. You know, it's like taking a test over again. I mean, I don't want to do it. Anyway, of course, so we made it to 10 minutes. I'm just curious. I suspended entirely the capacity of the computer to suspend on the hardware side, assuming that that should stop whatever it is that's this glitch. But I'm also keeping the mouse moving now and then. But it is weird because it really shouldn't be happening because I have all the software settings turned off. So I just don't know where it's coming from. Anyway, so far so good though. Of course, the inevitable and for Benatar welcome consequence of the... Alright, should be back. I don't know what this glitch is. Really annoying, 10 minutes or so. It's not precise though, so I don't know what to make of it. But anyway, yeah, the whole computer just like it was suspending, like it was hibernating or something. It just shuts down, but it won't restart. It won't do anything. I have to completely reboot. Don't get it. So anyway, I have to find out where I was. Okay, therefore, the only guaranteed way to avoid increasing the harm quotient of sentient life is for human procreation to be discontinued as a moral imperative. Of course, the inevitable and for Benatar welcome consequence of this advice will be to hasten the extinction of the human species. Yeah, it's one way of putting it, to hasten it. I mean, yes, you're clearly just pointing out that, yes, just like you want to make a death as quick as possible and is, you know, is uneventful, it's just logical. That's what orchestrating something produces, is music instead of noise. You want it to be done well, not done badly. So, I mean, that's one way of putting it, but it's also saying it's a graceful exit, you know, so, which makes sense, a graceful landing. It's just part of performing well, is if you've concluded that you're not sufficiently profitable, then you stop doing that. Like businesses, if they have some division that's losing money, well, then they shut it down. Anyway, extinction in his powerfully counterintuitive formulation is the only ethical outcome. So powerfully counterintuitive. I don't, you know, who knows what that even means. You know, obviously the, yes, I mean, extinction is just a, you know, it's a word, and it's a word usually, you know, layered in some sort of, they deserve better, like the dinosaurs or something. You know, the meteor shouldn't have decided. But if they went extinct because they said, gee, we're hideous monstrosities, let's give this up. Okay, we're not going anywhere. You know, we're not pretty flowers, we're ugly weeds. You know, then extinction is, you know, a willful act. Anyway, no doubt most people reading this summary will find Benatar's summaries, at least initially, unconvincing and his conclusions repugnant. All right, well, most people, so that's a trick, right? Should that mean anything in this context of when you're having anything, talking about anything that requires more context and intelligence? You know, most people believe in God, so, you know, the whole most people is already a very flawed source, and so the concession might be that, you know, you could just rewrite that people who have any kind of intelligence realize how important the subject is, and that you can't have a free lunch. You know, that there's no magic solutions, so you have to come up with some real world solution. Something like that, anyway. All right, but temper your intellectual gag reflex. So isn't that hilarious that he would say it's an intellectual gag reflex? And we know there's nothing intellectual about the average moron and his belief in, you know, Jeebus and Mohammed and all that mush. That's not an intellectual gag. They're going to gag on the truth, okay, more than they're going to gag on a lie. Okay. Anyway, for the moment, an attempt to forward an ethical program that both conserves the ethical obligation to do no harm and also justifies procreation. So clearly you can't do that. So there's no argument you can make, okay? You're basically saying victims are okay, and I'll deliberately and willfully do whatever I can to continue their creation. And that's it. You're just saying they don't matter. Fuck them. You don't care about their dissenting opinion. You don't ask for consent, and they're overtly telling you, I don't appreciate it. Don't do that again. I mean, I could say it right to my parents. I can say it to you. If you think you're doing something good, well, you better hope you don't have me as a son, because I'm not going to think you did a great job. I'm not going to be proud of you and say, wow, how bold and generous and loving you were and all that crap. I'm going to say, gee, what a stupid moron you were to step me in this shit. You know, and especially in the world the way it looks now. It's so disgusting. You know, that there's just no way you could have the illusion of, oh, it's going somewhere grand, shiny city on a hill. Who wants to live in an alien? Who wants it? Okay, you want to play around in your Wizard of Oz land. I have no interest at all. Okay, horses changing color doesn't really impress the fuck out of me. Anyway, jeez, it's just so bad. All right, it is remarkably difficult. So he's conceding it's remarkably difficult to, but temper your intellectual gag reflex for a moment and attempt to forward an ethical program that both conserves the ethical obligation to do no harm and justifies procreation. So he's conceding it's difficult, and yet later he's going to say, oh, it's so mockably stupid. It just, you know, it's not going to make much sense. And so Benatar concludes that there's no ethically defensible reason to procreate. Procreation is an utterly pointless exercise and a readily avoidable behavior that functions only to harm those brought into the world. So he's quoting a little bit from Benatar, two words. But anyway, fine. Right there is enough of an elegant statement, I would argue. It's just a fact that this is discretionary behavior. It's not vital to your gratification and function on earth that you raise children. And certainly you can raise the ones produced by other people who can't handle the job of raising them. So you can also, if you really need to do that, like that's what your life mission is, you can do it without you being the impositioner. All right, it is challenging indeed to conceive of a cogent ethical system in which the right to procreate supersedes the procreated person's right not to be harmed. Like I said, there's no consent, and the fact that you can't get consent doesn't mean that consent is now irrelevant. It's a real fact that you can't get it. Okay, and that's a bad thing. Not getting it and can't get it are really the same thing. It doesn't matter that you can't get it. It's the same as not getting consent. You're just sitting there saying you're going to override somebody else's judgment. And the judgment is right here already. Like I said, you know it's already here on Earth. There are victims who are saying, stop doing this to me. Okay, there's moronic victims who say, yeah, I don't mind, keep doing it. But there's plenty of saying, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be brought back here to go jump off a building again and again and again and again, or jump in front of a car, or do whatever, drink a bunch of drain cleaner, or whatever I have to do to kill myself to get the fuck out of here, because I don't find it satisfactory. And so, you know, and that testimony is right here, and you're just saying, I don't care. Your pain is irrelevant to me. You're not even, you know, you're going to give it any consideration at all, really, in the sense that you're not going to make any honest statement about the fact that you're deciding for somebody else that they should have your values and value your mission. Your mission is to go into space and litter the universe full of a bunch of squiggly organisms, you know, screwing each other over for 5 cents. I don't see any vision in that. I don't see any, wow, what a great idea. No, I see it as disgusting. Anyway, continuing. Let's see, maybe I'll try something. I'll try pausing and see if that prevents the disaster. I doubt it, but I don't think it's OBS that's causing the problem. But all right, still happening for no good reason. So, yeah, this is really irritating for both of us, probably. Anyway, so I was somewhere. All right, the right necessarily transgress the instant they are brought into existence. Oh, the ads are just too irritating. Anyway, this too is fundamental to Benatar's argument. Well, I mean, it's kind of a obvious. You can't have it both ways. So yes, obviously the right is violated. The fact is, you might get lucky, and your violation of the right to consent won't mean anything because your victim will be happy to be a victim. While most parents consider it an ethical duty to shield their children from harm, I don't even know whether most parents are even doing that, frankly. So even that's almost saying that's too generous to most parents. There's too many parents selling their kids into prostitution and having them as insurance policies, you know, for their own purposes. For their own ego, for lots of their own mission statements. They don't even enjoy their kids. They just have them as a piece of property. Most do not consider that the only certain way to avoid that harm is not procreating in the first place. So they don't even think about something so basic. They don't really give it much thought. As a kid, I probably gave it more thought than most people give it in their whole life. Which is, you know, another statement pointing out just how cruddy human beings are, generally speaking. In the decades since Benatar unveiled these provocative ideas in Better Never to Have Been, antinatalism has grown from a fringe position to a locus of serious discussion in moral philosophy circles. Well, I think if you're going to call yourself a moral philosopher, you would have to put in there some kind of question about what is, you know, the ethicalness of all these things. I mean, all those little thought experiments of, you know, the fat man on the bridge and the trolley, you know, all of those equations that do exist, and what really is the truth about, you know, getting to the truth about what the ethical balances are. Should you kill Hitler, you know, if you can, or our time traveler? Or should you impose the risk of some other Hitler taking power? Recently, antinatalism has spilled from the Moral Academy into the wider culture. And the New Yorker magazine profiled Benatar last November, and he appeared in Sam Harris's Waking Up podcast shortly thereafter. Yes, and Sam was rather ignorant, frankly, in taking the subject seriously. Curious, then, given the multitude of hours and thousands of words devoted to antinatalism in books, edited collections, academic journals and articles, interviews and popular media appearances, that nobody seems to have noticed how sociologically ignorant and vapid antinatal philosophy is. So he's calling it those things after he just explained how Benatar's questions are, in fact, difficult to answer. Where do you obtain this right besides saying nature gave it to me? And can't the rapist just use that argument then? It's natural, because in fact it is. While two chapters in Better Never Have Been are ostensibly devoted to the practical denouncement of programmatic antinatalism, Benatar considers humans in the broadest, vaguest, and most abstract sense possible. So then it's, this is a quote, I guess. The most obvious burden for the final generation is that it would live in a world in which these structures of society would gradually break down. So this is, even if Benatar said this, says Benatar, what does he know about it? Frankly, I don't see any reason, just as there's no good reason, for us to have a world now with rich people and poor people in it. We could decide to have a different kind of world. We could decide to pay people for working, not pay people to inherit, you know. We could do a lot of things a lot different, have a better world. It's just a fact. And the end times could be exactly the same way. People can face it with dignity and courage and all that kind of stuff, or they can face it as hysterical lunatics. And there's no obligation that the outcome be a certain way. So just to say it is silly. I mean, if populations declined, there's great advantages to be gleaned from that, as well as disadvantages. And all you need is people who structure their society to take advantage of the advantages and to evade the disadvantages. Anyway, there would be no younger working generation growing the crops. So again, like, growing crops requires young people. I mean, it's just such a funny terminology, even, because they've taken so much labor out of crop growing. That it's almost laughable, a statement. Obviously, you have so many less mouths to feed. You don't need nearly as much farmland and all that kind of, you don't need as much. I mean, there's just absolutely nothing, you know, the displacements are, yes, you won't need to build new houses, but you'll have one. Okay, you'll have two or three or four or five or 10. Come on, there's great advantages. Preserving order, running hospitals and homes for the aged and burying the dead. I mean, this is just almost laughable, right? That we won't have enough humans to bury the dead. Yeah, you will. There's no obligation to exist in unsustainable growth. No, none at all. Lots of animals have reached balances in their circumstances and it works out just fine. So there's just no reason for us to be to assume we can't live in anything other than a perpetually growing environment. It's absolute nonsense. Anyway, the situation is a bleak one indeed, and we can certainly say that looming extinction would be bad for the final people in this way. So obviously, if I'm one of the final people, it's not going to be bad at all. So, I mean, if the final people have the right attitude, it's perfectly manageable and not a big deal. No problem at all, really. There's nothing, there's no preventing us from still becoming doctors. There's no preventing us from doing things, learning trades, doing all these things and existing, acknowledging the circumstance. There's just no reason to say humans can only live in unsustainable environments. I mean, that's just idiotic. You know, unsustainably, recklessly sloppy, social circumstances. No, of course we can do better than that. All right, anyway, absent from this quote and from Benatar's argument more generally is any evidence of concern for the details of just how bad this final burden would be and who would bear it. So the fact is that human race is not getting out of the solar system, and it's, the human race is going to die here. And the last people on Earth are going to die in some horrible way as the Earth declines to be livable, becomes more and more caustic and hostile to the existence of biological organisms. And that'll be generational. That'll be many, 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 many generations you're going to force to attempt to adapt to a more radioactive, hotter, you know, all kinds of circumstances that are going to exist that are going to be very brutal. And you're okay with sentencing those people to that. Okay, but if we willfully decide to do something that'll be 1/10 of that, or 1/100 of that, or 1/1000 of that, you're opposed. I mean, the illogic is just amazing. What's your solution for humankind? Have you decided how they're going to escape Earth? Because it's not going to exist in a certain number of years. And it's certainly inevitable that a big blob of crap is eventually going to hit the Earth again, a big asteroid or something. It's going to cause catastrophic displacements and catastrophic damage to the infrastructure, and people will have to survive that. Why are you imposing all that harm? Too stupid. Really, just too stupid. While Bantar acknowledges that the final people will suffer much unless humanity end is rapid, yes, unless it's deliberate and willful. Yes, these final people are presented as statistical units rather than actual persons living in a real social condition. So again, he's claiming that this isn't a common game. All right, I think I found the source of the problem. Linux. There was another hard drive with a different copy of Linux on it, and somehow the computer was half booting from both devices. Both OSs, I don't know. So the other files are on the other hard drive, and these are on this hard drive, and I don't know if that's going to work. But anyway, I'll try to put it together, so we'll see if it does the same thing. But anyway, it seems one of the glitches is something went way wrong in the whole grub thing. Grub. Anyway, it's just crap you have to go through. All right, while Bantar acknowledges that the final people will suffer much unless humanity ends rapid, these final people are just statistical. Okay. The section entitled Phased Extinction, for example, diagrammatically represents the level of harm done to the final human population, but bizarrely presents this population as a single monolithic block in a sterile ethical vacuum. The truth is that whatever the human race does, I mean, in preparing for the future, it's going to have to do it as the human race. So eventually you're going to have to argue that a lot of this stuff is going to be unacceptable. Right now, countries are participating in activities like eating dogs and cats that, you know, most of the world says is, yeah, you can't do that. And they're going to do something about it eventually. So lots of things, vegetarianism. There'll be a point in the human progress where it'll be understood that you don't need to be a meat eater, and you certainly don't need to do it in this harmful way. And so there's going to be international prohibitions and international law against certain kinds of behavior, selling your kids into prostitution, different things will be internationally illegal. And so we're a long way from that world, but that would be something that has to be argued, that some of the decisions that have to be made about these big decisions, about the destiny of the human race, are going to have to be made in the context of everybody has to play along. There's not going to be any right to be a separate nation and do play by your own rules and piss in the ocean, so to speak. Pish, you know, do things that are obnoxious to what the rest of the world has decided is civilized and decent and acceptable. I guess the right word is acceptable. There'll be things that will become unacceptable internationally. So the whole point is this is long after we've decided as a world democracy that it's unacceptable to impose harm. And the fact is that's the only choice the biology gives us, is the obligation to impose it, okay, and without consent. And it's not acceptable. And so that simple decision will mean that the world will have to change and the people in it will have to understand the role they're playing. That we're here as janitors, we're here to do the right thing, we're here to fix a mess that we didn't create. And that's just the fact. And those people will man up to their task and understand that that's the world they have to live in. Just as we understand we have to live in a world where, young people have to work to take care of old people, and they have to do, we have these social obligations. There are people who are disabled and retarded and all kinds of horrible things, and we have to make provision for them. There's wildlife that we have to spend resources to protect it. We have to do things that cost us our welfare in protecting their welfare. And so those social responsibilities are all understood and accepted. So this is all just bullshit that the human race doesn't have enough integrity to fulfill its roles. Of course it does. Okay. They had enough integrity to put on a uniform and go fight World War II. I think we can do it. Anyway. Nowhere does Benatar seriously consider how suffering with which he is passionately concerned is differentially distributed on a global scale. I'm sure Benatar is quite aware of that. And so it's really not part of the subject, though, because this decision is going to be independent of current chaos. Clearly, there doesn't mean anything. If the United States says antinatalism is the way to go, but the rest of the world doesn't, then clearly what the United States is doing is just saying, let's exterminate Americans. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with the human condition. It'll just have to do with the American condition. Ending the American condition wouldn't do the world a big favor. Okay, so everybody knows that already. That's why they're all trying to get to America. It's because it's not a bad place compared to all the worst places on Earth. So it's the last place, essentially, that you'd want to wipe out first. So again, there's no reasoning here. This has already left the bounds of a reasonable conversation. Human lives are instead simply collected together on a narrow spectrum of bad and very bad. That's not a narrow spectrum. I'm sure Benatar will tell you it's a very broad spectrum. The worst life is a lot worse than the least worst life. And you'd certainly know which one to choose, okay? There's lots of fates you could have on this planet that are a lot better than others. And so, again, that's another just a little cheap exaggeration of Benatar's point. I'm sure Benatar is quite aware that there's a huge cavern of difference between the worst life experienced by a human being today and the best life. So it is worth pausing to ponder the questions Benatar and his disciples fail to address. So he calls them disciples. So there's more. So what are your disciples? What kind of mimic talk are they doing? What kind of unicorn love? Is that all your disciples get? Unicorn love. We'll solve all of our problems. All of the problems will be solved by doing absolutely nothing but hoping and wishing. Ugh, pathetic. What would the transitional period between the decision to end human procreation, the decision to say we don't need to play around with this fire anymore, let's quit playing with fire and then we will quit burning flesh. And again, to get there, all you have to do is we already got there. You know, and the civilized nations are already in declining population, native population, and if they didn't import their birth rate, they wouldn't have one. Okay, they would be in decline. They would be heading right for the extinction that you think is so horrible and fear-worthy. Okay, and human extinction actually look like. So again, that's the funny part. It would look exactly like what civilized nations look like now. What Japan looks like now is what extinction will look like. Okay, they're already on the road. It's not that hard to travel. You make more adult diapers than you used to. Big deal. How would the inevitable societal collapse? So again, this whole thing that somehow it has to collapse. So this is probably some liberal kooky, smurf who sits there and blames the idea of these unsustainable, ecological destructions and all this other stuff that he understands is unsustainable, and yet he thinks the unsustainable population growth. All right, we'll just do one more section and I'll give up. I gotta figure out what's wrong with this computer. New computer, new used one. It's been working fine, so I think this is just some sort of, Linux glitch, but we'll have to see. Shit, this is so irritating. Nowhere does Benatar seriously consider how suffering with which he is, on a global scale, humans and so very bad, okay. So it's worth pausing to ponder Benatar and his disciples' address. We did all that. Crumbling infrastructure, lawlessness, resource scarcity, social decay, and so on, be managed. So again, the argument is we'll have a ton of extra resources because there's fewer people. So we'll have more stores and more things and more everything than we need. And so we're going to have an excess of stuff and lots of already built stuff and lots of existing stuff, way over capacity, not under capacity. And he says that'll be some sort of doom for all of us. You know, no, it won't. And perhaps most importantly, who would bear the brunt of this collapse? So this is an argument. This is just such a straw man argument. And again, this is absolutely nothing in terms of the collapse created by just one big giant asteroid hitting the Earth. And that's an almost a statistical inevitability. So, you know, that doesn't bother him. The statistical inevitability of nature causing a catastrophic event, all of the suffering imposed by that, doesn't scare him. But the suffering that might be imposed by a transition to a more rational, sustainable way of life is somehow scary. Okay, so that's just too silly, right? Yes, it's too silly. Okay, and let's say programmatic antinatalism coincides with a wholesale shift in the social, legal, and political systems of production. Of course, that would be the whole point. And you would argue for all of those shifts right now. That's the joke here, right? This guy probably makes lots of arguments for how the world is unfair now, and you know, that it needs to change to a fairer system. And yet he sits there and says it's impossible. You know, just he undoes his own argument. Distribution and staying under what the human population currently lives, the human suffering that's supposedly compels us to become antinatalist, stands to get incalculably worse. So again, there's just absolutely no reason to think things get worse because there's less human beings. That's just retarded. Okay, nothing gets worse. Okay, there's every capacity to just change the numbers of people doing certain events and certain activities, and that's it. You just change the ratios. But no huge giant disaster. Assuming current ratios of income and, more importantly, accrued wealth. See, so he's so caught up in that, and yet he can't understand how he's basically making the argument you can't fix it because it would to be catastrophically disruptive. Inequity somehow remains stable in a world committed to severely reducing the birth rate. Again, and there's just no consequence to reducing the birth rate, in the sense that children are actually very expensive. It costs a lot of money to raise them, you know, to educate them and take care of their health care and all of those things. So there's huge benefit not to having a whole bunch of them. The poor will reach a point of societal collapse. So again, the poor are already in collapse. So what kind of stupid argument is this? They're already just a huge liability to social function. The crime rate, all of that stuff can all be blamed in large extent on poverty. So, you know, yes, obviously we all should want to get rid of poverty. We all should get rid of babies being born to poverty, people being raised in poverty. All of those things you should be antinatal on. Okay, much faster than the rich. As the Earth's population dwindles, creating conditions of widespread scarcity. So again, an oxymoronic, it's so stupid a comment, where, you know, no, scarcity is created by the fact that we don't have the capacity to meet the human need. Clearly, there'll be overcapacity in declining population. There will consequently be fewer doctors to tend the ill. So another bullshit notion. Why would there be fewer doctors? The whole point would be is we're taking natalism seriously. That is, most people are going to be raised in a much better conditions, less impoverished, not more impoverished. And babies will be more and more precious. Children will be more and more precious to people. And their welfare will be more and more important. And so it's more likely they'll be educated to be doctors. Fewer farmers to tend the harvest and to tend and harvest crops. So again, it's such a silly argument when we already know technology has already displaced people getting a fair wage. And he would sustain the migrant labor, which is this huge exploitation of human beings. This is part of the harm created. You know, we disable them essentially. We steal their vitality, their health, even. Grind them right into the ground for our cheap food. fewer engineers to build and maintain roads and homes and buildings and so on. So why would there be fewer engineers? It would be more engineers, not fewer engineers, because a higher percentage of the population would be educated, because babies would be precious. These societal goods are always unevenly distributed when conditions exist for their redistribution. These societal goods are already unevenly distributed when conditions exist for their redistribution. So again, he's saying it'd be easy to fix it. We can do this redistribution, but somehow in antinatalism you can't. You know, in the antinatalist world, no, you can't redistribute anything. You can't fix anything. Yeah, sure you can. Under such conditions, it is unlikely that the gap between the rich and the poor, both within and between nations, in areas such as healthcare access, education, drinkable water, housing, food, and so on, will be close. Of course, it's exactly the opposite. What's causing resource degrade in the poor countries? The overpopulation is. That's what's doing it. The fact is that people don't have any money to have the kids they're having. They have too many kids. They need food. They need sewage treatment. They need all these things. And there's no money to provide it. So, of course, antinatalism fixes this problem. It is not where antinatalist philosophy will be wildly embraced. The world's poor, whose plight, so again, whose plight, as if they've, you know, or some innocent victim. No, there's nothing innocent about ignorance, especially in the world now. The plight is largely self-imposed. Is already desperate. Worlds would suffer terribly en masse. Says this guy, right? So he has no real way to model this into this dystopia he's claiming would exist. Absolutely no reason to think that the planned demise of the human race would require any dystopic elements to exist at all. The whole idea of planning is to plan out all of those negative effects. You're the one with no plan, but to say, just keep going, keep doing what you're doing, it's working out just fine. You know, I have my World War III, insurance policy, so it's okay. A combination of the most... All right, so this will be the last segment. I'll try to finish up this last little bit and then get out of here and try to fix whatever's wrong with this computer. It's just really not right. It's just always something. All right, anyway, so the plight is already desperate. Okay, a combination of the most abject horrors of the gulags, Mao, Stalin, famines and plagues. And I guess he could put, you know, if he wrote it in 2000, later than 2018, he could put coronavirus in there. Auschwitz and Dachau. So all of the Dachau, all of this crap, you know, this isn't way overdone rhetoric. Oh yeah, I think it's way overdone. So if people became vegetarian, would he write the same argument about the horrors of becoming vegetarian? You know, just how, oh, it's just this terrible, awful thing that's going to happen to the world? No, this is just such baby talk. And our worst contemporary humanitarian crisis would likely amount to only a fraction of the suffering visited upon the final generation's poorest members. All this blah, 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 blah. No crisis at all. There's just absolutely no rational definition of a crisis, because you have to exist in a sustainable environment, that you cannot keep relying on making babies to be your slaves. You know, I mean, that's the irony. He's essentially defending a system where you use your children as parasitical tools to a better life, you know, creating an excess number of them, you know, marginalizing their labor value and their function and exploiting the fuck out of them. He's defending that, you know, which is hilarious, because obviously he's philosophically in the next column, he'll be a fighting against that. But just this grotesquely silly, excessive rhetoric. And therein lies the rub for the antinatal argument. The problem is not its logical structure. So just see how stupid this sentence is. The problem isn't that it's illogical. No, that can be the only problem an argument has is when it's illogical. Otherwise, it's a really good, okay? If it's all logical, then that means it wins, idiot. Which is frankly exquisite. So amazing. He's saying the logic is exquisite. And now we're going to defeat it with what? Straw man and bullshit. I mean, if that's all you've got, right? If it's exquisite logic, you lost the argument, buddy. But it's a headlong confrontation with social reality. So what is social reality? Humans can't change? Oh, then why are you arguing for change? If we can't change the rich man, poor man thing, then why are you arguing to try if it's not possible? Oh, it's just such a pathetic argument, such hypocrisy, duplicity in this nonsense. I find Bannatar's social disregard disgusting, distressing. Yeah, well, I find your hypocrisy and duplicity disgusting. distressing, but not surprising, isn't that? So he says that Bannatar has social disregard when clearly Bannatar is highly sensitive to the social condition and the conditions of people in the circumstances where they're being harmed by other people's actions. That's what he writes about. Moral philosophy has sometime drifted away from considering humans as they are found in their real lives. That you mean their real delusions. So most humans have a delusional notion that a god like them created them for the purpose of being them-y. Yeah. And closer to a kind of abstract arithmetic. So again, he's anti-arithmetic and logic, apparently. Thousands of words in Bannatar's To Never Have It Been have been devoted to detailing precise ethical theorems such as a failure like ours, a future like ours, or the non-identity problem, or the multitude of other theories, is and isms. Like what, fairism? That would be a fair, scary concept to you. Fair, let's have fairism. Yeah, that'd be just terrible. But not a single word is spent considering how antinatalism, yeah, would magnify existing social divisions along geographical, racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic lines. Absolutely no evidence that would do any of that. I mean, especially if you implement it logically. Like, the first thing you do is just start paying people who are poor not to have children that they can't take care of and can't afford to have. So if we pay a little price to keep them out of prison, so to speak, you know, pay the criminals a little bit, then we save a big pile of money because it costs so much to capture them and incarcerate them. So if we can put a little bit of prevention money in, it'll be a big payoff. So we know that poverty is not something systemic in the world. It's systemic because poor people keep having kids they can't educate and take care of, who end up having more kids who they can't educate and take care of. It's a disease, and you can end it by, you know, discontinuing the transmission of the disease. Okay, in its 237 pages, the words poverty and race are mentioned twice each. Well, how much should they be mentioned? How many times, how much should people harp on it? You know, is it always essential that we have to talk about those subjects? No. The nicer term appears in the context of a robust and meaningful discussion about how those phenomena accelerate human suffering. Well, clearly divisions are a big problem. So diversity sucks, and you nuts will never concede that that's the real source of a problem, is diversity. It's not a picnic. It's a pain in the ass. All right, so anyway, I think I'll just end there before starting another paragraph, because disaster is on its way, no doubt. So anyway, there's probably more to read here, but it's just the same. It's really, he just sees the end times argument, and he's blaming the end times argument on Bannatar as if, because you die a few days early, it makes some kind of difference about how bad the end days would have been. No, it's not going to change anything. The fact that the human race will end is a fact. The fact that we end it 10 days ahead of time, or 10 years, or 10 billion years, that's the question. Is there anything to be gained by extending the amount of time before you finally say, we got to close business? You know, it's going to end. we will inevitably be made extinct because the universe doesn't preserve complexity. Okay, it allows it to run its course and then it wipes it out. And that's what the universe is constantly doing, is refreshing and rebooting. And if you have some other delusion about how it's going to work, then that's all it is a delusion. Because you're not going to escape. You're not going to amass any technology that's going to liberate you. So in spite of what the silly physicists have told you, you're not going to break the substantial limitation barrier that exists from us being able to escape a very hostile universe. It's hostile to complexity. It doesn't really like it. Okay, it likes reducing everything back into, you know, just a bunch of hot crap. Anyway, so enough of a video. Shit. Yeah. So sorry about the interruptions, and but whatever. It's a bigger problem for me because now I got to figure out what the hell is causing it. So I'll at least find out whether it's OBS, and then I can go on to the next step, and the next step, and the next step. But I mean, yeah, it's the stupidest glitch. I've seen computers do stupid things, but frick. It's like I said, if it was exactly 10 minutes, then I could say, okay, I gotta just find what's causing this 10-minute cycle. But it's not. Anyway. So, till the next time and such, and so forth and whatnot.